than that. And
no
David,
problem.
I see your hand. I'll get to you in just a second. Sorry about that. So one of the ways, I lost my train of thought all of a sudden.
People can,
oh,
one
I got
of the
it.
Ways
no,
to
I got
meta,
it.
The meta,
so,
yeah.
So if you get feedback often that is telling you that you're either bossy or you're condescending or maybe you're controlling or maybe you're manipulative, it doesn't matter what the feedback is. But if you get consistent feedback that you're a certain way, meta comments before you make a comment help people interpret you differently. So one of the ways you can say it is you just simply flag it and you go, hey, I don't mean this. Sometimes I come off in ways I don't mean. And if this sounds condescending, it is not at all intended that way.
Mm-hmm.
That's a meta comment. Meta comment, meta is about, meaning it's a comment about a comment. And so
right.
I'm going to make a comment and I have a meta comment in advance. So try meta comments in advance of many things you're going to say when you think you're going to need to change something or you think you don't agree with it, or even if you don't understand it,
mm-hmm.
just make a meta comment.
Okay.
And that will help. That will help them begin to de-escalate their defensiveness. Now, I'm going to make a suggestion here also. It is entirely possible that you have now developed a reputation inside the 90 days of being seen as this way.
Mm-hmm.
If that salesperson has been talking bad about you behind your back, if that conversation set people off, if you've been telling people they've been doing it wrong most of the time you've been there, if you've been asking too many questions and not getting and not understanding what they're saying, you can get unintentionally a reputation as being a contrarian, caustic, high conflict person in the system.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is people will start to avoid you.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that happens is your credibility starts to decline.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it is recoverable, but just know that that could be happening. And when your credibility starts to decline, your ability to make change vanishes. Because the only way any leader could ever make change is if they have high credibility.
Correct.
Credibility is the currency of all leadership. And if you don't, if we haven't nurtured it, developed it, maintained it, your ability to be effective vanishes. And so be on high alert for where is my credibility rating right now, roughly?
Mm-hmm.
Hard to know. It's an invisible, you know, stock symbol ticker tape that no one tells you. But
mm-hmm.
you can start to get indicators of it by mm-hmm. how people respond in meetings or whether you get invited to meetings or how things are going on. Sometimes that's an indicator of credibility waning.
Yeah. Yeah. Understand.
So these meta comments will help you restore credibility also. So focusing on tone of voice, just awareness without judgment,
mm-hmm.
Making meta comments before you're going to start something, go, hey, sometimes people hear me as bossy and a know-it-all.
Mm-hmm.
That could not be further from the truth of what I'm about to ask you. Just know that.
Right.
And then ask whatever you want to ask.
Okay. Thank
Sound
you.
Good?
Yes,
okay.
Very much so.
David, I see that hand.
All right, I'm coming off of mute. How's it going, guys? Thanks
very
for
good.
Having me. I was I was driving for the first half, got held up on an appointment, but I was anxious to jump in on this meeting. It's my first one. And I was listening to the videos last night, this morning, in module one. And one of the things that I was anxious to ask you about was the why statements for the, like, the to and then your contribution so that your impact. So, and I keep hearing you say this term meta statements, and I'm thinking that this is kind of where my question, this is kind of segues right into my question is, as really, like, in my role, I'm in charge of the company's entire vision and destiny, right? So, you know, as a, you know, at the top of the food chain, so to speak, right? And you know my story where we're pretty linear, you know, there's no layers of structure, managers, whatnot. So I feel that my contribution has an impact on pretty much every single segment of our business. So, and also the individuals making up the greater sum of it, you know, kind of that synergy that is, you know, our goal to reach. So my question becomes, like, when I'm trying to scheme my why statements, I keep finding myself like, well, which direction am I going? Like, how far do I have to zoom out to create one that's going to work for me? Or is there a possibility that I need to have like a different why statement for each, depending on the who I'm facing, right? So obviously I have a different why statement to our clients than I do to our internal staff. I have a different why statement for my sales team than I do for my installation team. I have a different why statement when I go to our family members that are involved in the business, you know, like, so for someone in my position to, you know, am I entitled to have several why statements, or, I mean, I just help me out there. And, you know,
yeah, sure. I'll be glad to answer that question. I want to just flag something for you. You know, I know what you're up against over the next 2 months in terms of time commitments and demands. I would generally flag this kind of work for March. You know, I would want to dig into real why work in March, because why work is like a 401k investment plan. It's really, really powerful and high impact, and long-term you're going to need it, especially if you want to create a company that is not personality centered. You need to create that. But there's a whole body of knowledge and a way of doing that that is somewhat time consuming and requires, I would recommend, almost the entire company. There's a participatory way in which it gets created that it isn't yours. So there's two why statements. There's one that is your why statement, and there's one that is the company why statement. They're completely unrelated, but they can inform each other if you want. As an owner, you can have it inform if you want. But so to give you an example, my why statement personally, roughly, I mean, I don't have it written necessarily, but it's kind of in my heart. And my heart is, I exist to be a catalyst in people's movement towards their own development and the universe. Like, that's why I exist on the planet. I am a healer. I'm a catalyst. I'm a coach. I'm a guide. It's what I do. Well, I can do that in lots of different ways. I did it as a pastor for a while. I've done it on all. I started it as a very young age, seventh grade. People nicknamed me Freud. I've always known that about me. That's why I do what I do. So I do this now because I've selected to apply that to a particular niche of people. I could have been a life coach. I could have been a health coach. I could have been any number of kinds of guides in the world, but this one felt natural to me. So I just chose this one. So my company why is that we exist to cultivate the highest potential in leaders. That's the contribution, to cultivate the highest potential in leaders so that they can grow organizations that are good for people and the world. That's my why statement. Now, the why statement informs and attracts, meaning it informs decisions we make, and it determines who's attracted to work with me, both as clients and as employees. So people find that why, even though I didn't state the why, it's kind of the water I drink. It informs what I do. I want to help you grow. That's financial. I want to help you grow an organization that is also good for people and the world. People is your customers. People is the people in you employ. The world is externalities, things that you're not directly serving but could impact the world negatively. So I'd like that to be a positive impact also. So that's what I do. And I use a huge range of tools to help people do that. And I have goals and strategy and structures and other things that fall out of that. But all of those can be erased completely. The why statement holds. And it doesn't pivot, it doesn't bob, it doesn't weave, it doesn't get adjusted, it doesn't get revisited. Maybe every 10 years, maybe I'll revise it in 10 years, but it's a really long range, big picture umbrella purpose that governs really big decisions. And sometimes my recruitment and even my marketing. Sometimes it will be part of my sales conversation. Sometimes it will be, actually almost always, is part of recruitment. If I need a team member that I want to be a part of this, I want them to understand this is why we do what we do. And so this is important for me to understand. Having said that, while I think it is extremely important for you, it is not urgent for you, because I know where you are in the life cycle of your business. And for the next 2 months, what is urgent is getting you really smart structures. So the reason I wanted you to watch those first few modules is to give you framing and orientation around how I think about human people and work and businesses and organizations. So those three jobs are just good for you to have in the back of your mind. Enjoyment, learning, performance. Those three things matter, and most people only think about performance. And so that's why I wanted you to have that framework. And just understanding that whole idea, there's a whole emotional system that is governed by how people are learning and whether they're enjoying and how they feel about themselves, their work, their ambitions, their boss, people we work with and for, their customers. All of that is informing this emotional system. Yeah, so yeah, just having that framing will help you. And then I'll pause there and see if that makes sense.
That does make sense. And, you know, I will run a why by you just since I did the, you know, I thought of one and I just will run it by you. But before I do, the, you know, I like the idea of the smart structures. And, you know, one thing you mentioned in one of the videos about like kind of repositioning or sorry, reframing the mentality of work towards an act of service. And I think that as a leader, that's like one of the most important things to keep in mind, like at every moment of the day, because there's always that looming temptation to just push people off and like act like you just don't have enough time or like not give them the time that they deserve. And I think that, you know, as you know, people grow and their responsibilities become more significant, more demanding, that it's a natural, you know, I had one of our long-term staff members say to me, you know, I would wish that you were as accessible as you were, you know, 2 years ago now. Like, you know, I was used to that proximity and now you're like, you know, off doing a million things and you filled the role of your dad and your mom and blah, blah, blah. Like everybody's like, and then another staff member says to me last night, is like, you know, it's like people got to get in line to get to you, right? And I think that the act of service, like, you know, being of service is leadership. Like, there's nothing more important than that statement to me, because I need to make people feel like I'm there for them, not them for me.
So I'm going to push back on you a little bit.
Okay.
I'm going to push back on you a little bit. You've got how many direct reports?
Well, in the company, we're at about 30. And so too many. Yeah.
Okay. So okay. Nobody can ever manage 30 people directly. It's not going to work. So here's the deal. Where you're headed as an organization, your long-term employees will not thank you for what's coming. They just won't. Nobody likes layers and hierarchy. Nobody is like, you know what? I can't wait to not report to my boss anymore and to have a new boss. That will never happen. But for you to be effective, you cannot afford to continue to serve 30 people directly. You are harming your business by doing that. You're harming them by doing that. So it is important that you change the structure of your business for your effectiveness and to serve them. It is an act of service to put in place certain kinds of boundaries. So I don't disagree with you that leadership is partly about service. It is about service, absolutely. But people often interpret that to be like, well, I'll just be like Jesus then and just give away my life.
Right, like, I'll just fall on the sword. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'll just fall on the sword all the time and I'll just not have a personal life because, well, I'm the boss, so I better give away everything of my... No, this is not helping you.
Not helping them.
So here's, at the end of the day, or at the beginning of the day, where we are now for you is... We're going to need to set new expectations for your team members. And I'll help you have the series of conversations you've got to have in order to reset the structure of your organization.
And that's what I mentioned to you. Okay, module four.
Module four is going to be where I want you to start. I want you to start there. And I want you to start getting familiar with the language and the structures and things like that. Not the entire module. Some of the things in the module won't be as essential right away, but really where I want you to focus on is the architecture of structure, the philosophy of how you structure an organization. Get smart about that. Get familiar with the terminology, get familiar with the tools, and then you and I will start to use them in your system. For example, I already know you're gonna need four lieutenants. You can pick the title you want to pick. Director is a great title. You know, small organizations are notorious for inflating titles like CEO or C-suite, you know, chief marketing officer. Those are corporate titles. So I would say, you know, director, and then leave room for them to become a VP. It's a great way to allow people to feel like they climb the ladder. So what happens is when you go from a flat organization to a hierarchical one, people generally don't like it. So what you have to do is you have to offset that by creating both titles and pay scale that match responsibility. And that offsets their feelings of, I'm really sad that we're not one big happy family. And all of a sudden they're like, well, I'm really sad about that, but I sure do like having more power, influence, and money. So that helps me feel better about, and I like being a part of something that's growing. And guess what? We're moving to hierarchy because we're growing. So that's the first thing I'm going to tell you is we're going to install one layer to start. You may install two, but I think for now, I think you can get away with one very easily. And then you're going to have four directors, each one responsible over a certain area. You're going to define roles, responsibilities, authorities, and accountabilities. All of that's going to be defined in module four. You're going to learn that. So I want you to be thinking about, what are my four roles? If you already know who the people are in the company that you want in those roles, great. If you need to hire, that's fine too. It's okay to hire. But this is what I want you to be prepared for. Anytime a restructure or reorganization happens in a company or a team, and you have a new boss over somebody else, it is as if that person was fired from their existing job and rehired to a company they didn't apply for, because 70% of someone's experience of their work comes from their direct supervisor. And just knowing that doesn't mean you shouldn't restructure. It gives you awareness of the emotional experience that is going on in a team member. And when you know that experience, you can be a lot more smart about how you plan that transition to help somebody get across that bridge.
Yeah, that's big. It's big.
So that's what you're going to be up against. And it's not up against, it's going to make your life so much easier. And so I'm going to help you figure out, what are the roles that you need? Who's going to get hired? How are you going to onboard? How are you going to set expectations? And then what are going to be the meeting protocols in place and access protocols that you're going to expressly state to everybody so that they know, hey, the reason you don't have direct access to me anymore is because you're not supposed to. And I know that's really hard for you, but in order for you and I to achieve this vision, in order for us to create the great thing we want to create, this was a necessary step. And it's hard and there's loss, but I believe that there's a lot of gain too. And that's why we've made the choice.
Very excited about it. Thank you for that. And then I'm going to ask one more question and then give it to the rest of the group. Thanks for the one-on-one time here. And hopefully anyone else is benefiting from this, is in a similar position. So in module four, you believe that there's, I think that having those conversations is going to be that's the make or break, right? Because I had mentioned to you yesterday about how every other change so far in terms of moving from a floppy disk to the cloud and, you know, putting in some additional layers of structure, you know, documentation, that has all been a little semi-collaborative, but more of like a, hey, this is how it is now. And this is why, you know, you show them why. It's because we're doing, you know, we went from 1,000 transactions to 4,000. That's important to note, is that we need new systems. But the other, you know, now this new layer of, you know, everyone that we know here, new faces, new, I like what you said about access protocols and meeting protocols. Like, when that is communicated, do you make people feel like they were part of the formulation of these protocols, or do you just say, hey guys, these are the ground rules?
We'll get into all that later. Those are deep, okay, and important questions. Here's what I want you to know right now. I don't want you to feel like you got to bite it all off. It's okay for you to take this in bite sizes. And so the first bite I want you to do, actually, there is one other video I want you to watch in module one, and that's the staging the ascent video. I'm pretty sure it's video 12. Staging the ascent is the heartbeat of all change management in organizations. Understanding that at a high level, the emotional process by which change is brought about through organizations, that's where that is. Then I want you to start getting familiar with the first, I don't know, up through maybe video 7-ish, something like that. Whatever interests you, but for sure the first 5-6 videos I want you reviewing. I want you getting familiar with those. And then on the next call, I want you to bring your questions after having viewed those things. I also want you to bring to me, if you already know who's going to be in what role and which kind of really broad strokes, what roles you know you need to create. Once I have that, then we'll help you design the conversations you need to have. But you don't need to have too many of those yet.
That's awesome. Thanks for your help.
So between now and next week, those things you need to do. If you have questions, feel free to email me. Otherwise, I think we're meeting next week. We are meeting next week, yeah.
Awesome, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Stick around. I can come back to you maybe in a bit. Let's go in with Colin. How are you, Colin?
Things are good. Thanks, Shane. I guess nothing major to report. I had a lot of successes over the last few weeks. You know, took your advice in some of the conversations, and things have kind of really worked out well. So I guess the question right now for me is, you know, kind of in this period of non-crisis, so there's not really anything that's really, you know, driving all of my attention or a specific employee or something along those lines. So in that situation, it's kind of easy just to be like, you know, put your hands around your head, kick back and so forth. So kind of wanted to get your thoughts on what should I be doing to continue kind of moving forward or continue to, you know, keep monitoring this overall change and transition with the new corporate entity involved and so on and so forth. So I don't either lose momentum or, you know, get too comfy cozy where I lose sight of some things that may or may not be brewing outside of my immediate attention.
Well, I would say, first of all, congratulations. That's awesome. Enjoy. And then the second thing I'll say is just wait.
I figured as much, right?
So it'll come find you. You don't have to go looking for it. It'll come and find you.
Oh, but I know.
In the meantime, I know you know that. I'm just kidding. In the meantime, which modules have you already watched?
I've made myself through by 1 and 2. So I'm still kind of making my way through it. Yeah.
I would say keep going through the modules. Module 3 and 4, I'll highlight the performance management side of the conversations in module 3. I think before you have to kind
That's
of,
good.
What I think is great about what you're the role, the spot you're in right now is when you watch those modules, you're watching from a place of proactivity rather than reactivity. You know, instead of cramming for a final, you're actually integrating the information. And so keep going, keep watching the modules, keep like continue on module 3 in particular, because I think you have a lot of performance management issues that keep coming up. That's what seems to keep coming up. That module is all about how do you do performance? How do you have those performance conversations? How do you structure them? How do you think about them? How do you have termination conversations? Just start getting familiar with that. Module 4, I would tell you to skip to meeting protocols. There's really powerful meeting protocols.
I've done that one. That one's great. Yeah, I've done that one. Yeah.
And then
we talked about that a couple times ago.
Good. And then after you've done module 3, then feel free to jump to module 5, where there's a lot around polarity management. If you haven't already done polarity management, that's an important one to get familiar with. And then once you have that, let me know what you learn. Let me know what you're thinking. And then we'll, if you don't have a crisis or anything you need to talk about, we can proactively start thinking about some things for you. Sound good?
Okay. Yeah, sounds great. One other thought. I just onboarded a new employee, so want to make sure that it goes as smoothly as possible. I've watched some pieces of the first 90 days. How do I kind of reapply that, you know, less from my first 90 days to somebody else's first 90 days?
I think a great way to do that is you will understand from the perspective of the boss what you expect. And you know, most bosses, when they onboard somebody, they're like, you're hired, let's get to work. And then they go work, right? What you're able to do is say, I actually know what you need to be successful in the first 90 days. And I want to set clear expectations about what I want. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to go interview all the key stakeholders, however many there are. If there are 3, interview 3. Ask these kinds of questions. I want you to be getting smart about these kinds of things. Then I want in 30 days, after you've had a series of conversations, figured out where the bathroom is, all that stuff, I want you to come back to me with your hypothesis about how you'd like the next 60 days after that to go.
Okay.
And what you're doing is you're saying to them, this is all about, the first 90 days is all about expectations alignment. So I want you to be clear on what I'm saying, and I want to be clear on what you're saying, and that can take some time. That's a series of conversations. It's not a one and done. I expect we will not fully understand each other at first, and that's okay. You guys have a formal onboarding process in addition that you run?
I mean, outside of the first week where you're doing all the HR, IT introductions, and so on and so forth, then it is a little bit more loose with respect to each team. Each team has a bit of a different process based primarily on type of accounts that they're working with, their clients, and so on and so forth. So it gets a little bit disjointed after, the first week or two. And I'd like to rein in a little bit more control and get a little bit more consistency with that, especially as we start to scale.
So one thing that I recommend you'll do then in that case is, in module one, there is a little section about rituals, tools, and processes that are there to design and build culture in an organization. And some of them you've already got in place, but one of the big ones is onboarding. Onboarding is one of the, some people call it new employee experience or whatever, but the onboarding experience is where culture is established. And there should be every time there's an onboarding, like if you need to do it quarterly, that's fine. You don't have to do it with every single employee right when they get there. But there should be if we think we're going to hire 10 people in the next 3 months, let's get them all in a room and let's have a structured time of storytelling. And we're going to tell the story of the company. We're going to tell the story of the vision. We're going to tell the story of the values. We're going to make it fun and interesting. We're going to ask them about their values. So there's a whole process by which you can create another layer, which isn't just functional. It's also, here's who we are. And just to be clear, culture really is, all culture is the behaviors you can expect of me and the behaviors I should expect of you. Mm-hmm. Not work behaviors, but human behaviors. That's what culture is. Most culture is what's called below the line. Every organization has culture. They have culture below the waterline, beneath the ice, the down below the iceberg, where you can't see it, where you just try to figure it out as you go. Every company has culture above the line too. They say, we believe in X, Y, and Z. I had this amazing experience where I was onboarding. We missed a chance to onboard this guy. He was a very high level executive. He came in within a year, he had failed. And he was really, really effective in his former company, came into this new company. He had no credibility within a year. And when I did the kind of postmortem on what happened and interviewed everybody, I realized that the company he entered had totally opposite culture below the line versus above the line. So their above the line stated culture, words on the wall were, we are radical thinkers. We are disruptive in our approach to things. And we care passionately about, I can't remember what the third one was, but it had this kind of revolutionary quality to it. Mm-hmm. And when I interviewed everybody, what I learned is their real culture was, if you don't have coffee with me when I ask if you want to get coffee, I don't trust you anymore. That was the real culture. Everybody's opinion matters, especially mine. That was their culture. So like when they were like, I issued an opinion and he didn't like it, and I don't like him anymore after that. And you're like, cool. Sounds disruptive and radical. What are you talking about? Coffee, beer. Like, this guy wanted to go home at the end of the day. He didn't want to go have a beer with you, but he didn't know. If you had said, write it on the wall, we won't trust you unless you have beers with us at the end of work, And so that's the kind of thing that you're trying to help someone with, is you're trying to help them interpret. You want to take as much of that below the line culture as possible, put it above the line, and your employees are way more successful. And so
module one,
if you haven't gone through all of module one and built out a lot of those things, candidly, that might be a better place for you to spend time when you're trying to be proactive. That is the proactive stuff. Vision, values, all the best practices, the mistakes people make when they try to build values, the mistakes people make when they try to create culture, tons of mistakes, especially in companies that are quote unquote high culture companies. They tend to make a lot of mistakes. And so that module will help you understand, not the only way, but a way that I know works. And so you might take some elements from that to help you, because onboarding is one of the biggest parts of building a really great culture.
Yeah, I'll go back through it. I do onboarding specific with each employee individually. We're still small enough for us to do that, but really formalizing, I like the idea of the story. And really, you know, going back in time and making it, you know, a little bit more interesting, a little bit more formal, as opposed to, you know, just this is who we are, this is what we do kind of thing. So, okay.
Yeah. And to be really clear, the most fun thing about storytelling the vision of a company is don't tell a story of triumphant ascent. You can tell the story of triumphant ascent, but tell it realistically. Tell the funny stories, tell the things that are, you know, maybe apocryphal, create that campfire quality of I remember one company, these guys, they were wildly successful and they were built a real estate company. And we were talking, I just interviewed them and I got their stories. Tell me the funniest thing that happened to you. Oh, there's this one time we went out and did this. It was the dumbest thing we've ever done, but we got the deal. We don't know how we got it, but this guy said that and it was totally crazy and blah, blah, blah. That's in your onboarding. Because that reflects this value that you've already said you have, which is try things and don't be afraid to fail. So tell that story, because every story you tell will support the values that you've laid out. And now it feels real organization instead of we're the number one leading manufacturer of supply parts in the Midwest. You should be so happy to work with us. You know, nobody cares about that. They're like, yeah, got it. But if you tell real human stories that are connected to the vision and values of the company, that include failures and limitations and mistakes and learnings that were harvested from those things, people will connect deeply with your culture.
Yeah. It makes it real. It makes it human.
Yep. People want to be a part of what's human, not institutional.
Right.
I mean, Southwest Airlines is a massive institution. Southwest Airlines is a massive institution where if things go wrong, people die. But if you talk to the employees that work there, they feel like they're with a family and they really mean it. Good. Okay. So maybe it's module one in that case. Susan, how are things? Where are we in the process?
I just wanted to say to Colin that there are so many opportunities now with the new year coming that those conversations about setting that culture and those expectations, you have a real opportunity now to, you know, and I feel it as well, that we can go back and say, okay, that, you know, last year is last year, where are we going? And what do we want to change? What do we want to let go? What do we want to use as a springboard or a foundation to do something else? So we're at a pivotal point for all of us, that the new year can bring an opportunity to have that kind of conversation without it being hokey or outside of what a normal conversation would be. So I'm looking forward to those kinds of conversations. So going forward, just as a thought.
Can I just say, Susan, before I move to you, I just want to say one other thing to Colin, just a few prompts to help you, Colin. So when you're trying to build culture and you're telling stories about your culture instead of that triumphant ascent, which we've talked about, just write down answers to questions like, what was the biggest risk you guys took? What was the scariest time in the history of the company? How did you get out? What's a really funny memory you have of something that was related to the business, the company? What's a favorite memory you have? What was the hardest time in the life of the company? And how did you get through it? Answers to those questions will generate real stories to create a real human organization instead of an institution. And that is incredibly attractive to people. And make sure that the answers are linked to the values if you have values that are explicit. Mm-hmm. That'll help. Okay. Every time you bring someone in, tell those stories.
Yeah, I had that. You know, tell the stories of the values or of the vision, how it was all formulated. I mean, they're built upon or they're foundational in their own right, the organization. So yeah, there is a story that feeds into this as to why this was identified and utilized, continues to be a guiding value or vision for the organization. So, great.
Yep. Good. Okay. And if you want, Colin, if you want to do some of that, and the next time you come back on the call, bring some of the stories and I'll help you craft them a bit. Because there's a way to craft those stories in a way that are extremely compelling. And I can tell you which details to suppress and which ones to emphasize and create arcs that if there's an arc, you can just tell a little bit of the story and I'll show you how you can utilize that if you want.
And create a roller coaster, right? Yeah. You keep them going. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Susan, how are we feeling?
Exhausted.
Yeah, still, huh? Imagine.
Yeah. But you know, there's that saying that you go through those phases where you can talk about something and it's very emotional, and you well up and you have that, and then you kind of move on from that to where the skin gets thicker and you kind of figure out how to pass it. And I'm getting there. I'm working on, I had the conversation that we talked about last week about the gala, super good information where I was able to go and say, look, you know, I've thought about this, just as you said, you know, I've thought about this. I've put it on a piece of paper. I've had conversations with myself in the mirror about having a conversation with you. I just don't see how this can happen unless we come up with a plan to have a gracious transition where it puts you in the best light, where we don't create a situation where we cause some damage along the way. And there was a bit of...
Wait, I'm sorry. You're saying you had a conversation with her about removing her, about her leaving?
No, this is about the board chair and the gala and how she said she was done and she didn't want to do it. And I was trying to bring her back on board to say, great. Look, you know, we can't do that. We have to figure out a different way. Awesome. So your advice to me was, you know, I've thought about this so many different ways. And it's worked. We have decided that we won't do a big one in person. I'm thankful for that. I'm not thankful for the situation, but I'm thankful for that because it allows for some leeway and less stress on me as far as, okay, now I got to really run to get to the finish line. Now the finish line is a little easier. I was able to make some contacts and move some things around that are going to allow us to actually probably do something that is going to look great. I'm in the process right now of using the current chair to onboard a new chair. So we'll have a conversation that we can, you know, say that it's time, you know, young blood, all of that sort of stuff, that conversation will go on. And hopefully we can bring her on board with an understanding that I'll be there to support her and the previous chair will be there to support her and that it'll be a smooth transition. So that's kind of gone on. The one challenge that I'm having is that I've done all the job descriptions, roles, responsibilities, all of that of the individuals going forward. And I think a lot of the conversation that we've been having today with everybody else in the structure and how that's going to be, I want to go back to that now and look at it again and have a conversation with the board about what that structure is going to look like and maybe use some other individuals that are in the organization to provide an opportunity for them to take on some more responsibility so that they feel more, maybe more valued, more engaged, more responsible for what's going on here, rather than the ability to kind of sit back and say, well, I really don't have to do that because she'll figure it out. She always does. Then I am not. And I had conversations. I don't know if I told you this. Maybe I did. And more conversations about the backlash as a result of, sending a letter and what that does and what position that puts us in. And so someone came to me and asked me, you know, we really need to update the website and do this. And I said, I just want you to know that I've heard what you've had to say, but we're not in a position to do that right now. And said, I hear you, but it's not going to work right now. There are other priorities that that are, you know, in front of us. My one frustration is on the job descriptions and those types of things. I've sent everything, and now I'm waiting for feedback from the board. You know, does that work? Does that look good to you? Is that what you're thinking? And I'm almost to the point of doing a negative response. If I don't hear from you, I'm assuming this is all good with you. And then that'll give me the opportunity to go ahead. And here are the places I will be putting those adverts along the way. Because with Christmas and the holidays and people being in and out and traveling and doing all of that, well, at the end of the day, we can't stop for that. It's too important to keep it moving ahead.
Yeah, good. This is good. I'm so glad you had the conversation you had, and I'm so glad you're starting to you are actually stabilizing that whole thing. That's great.
Yeah, well, you know, I have nothing to lose at this point, because as the emotion relaxes, and I had lunch yesterday with a dear friend who is a CEO of a pretty big company, and we were discussing this because she's a confidant of mine, and we can have this conversation. And she goes, "Oh my God, tell me when I can tell people you're available," because, you know, and you need a bit of that and a bit of that. It's not what I'm looking to do, but it does help with, it moves the cliff away. I'm not headed towards the cliff and falling off. You know, sometimes there's a fork in the road rather than a cliff. Awesome. And I'm looking at it that way.
Awesome. Okay. You're out of the ICU now. That's
great. You told me I would be. I didn't believe you.
Yeah. Well, you're out of it now. That's good. The way that you're seeing it now is usually cliff thinking is ICU. That's how I'm like, okay, just go back to sleep. We'll take care of it.
Well, and the other thing is that the individual that wrote the letter, who, you know, is very much a part of it. We have a staff meeting, and they can be a bit difficult. Not because of anything other than there is a sort of an elephant in the room. And I went to this, Colin, I was thinking when you were talking about this, I went back to telling some stories about when we were very small and it was just the two of us. And, oh my gosh, do you remember when? Oh my gosh, do you remember when? And there was laughing and she joined in and da, 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 da. So trying to be, look, if we're going to work together, and if it's, whether it's the fork or the cliff or whatever it is for the period of time that it's here, it has to be at least somewhat enjoyable.
Yeah,
tolerable, right.
Not just tolerable. It's okay to be enjoyable. Just outright cast a vision of enjoy. You don't have to lower it. I think that's
But taking it back to where it was for her, maybe starts to her brain thinking about, you know, the fact that you didn't just arrive here on the train by yourself. Yeah. There were a whole lot of people pulling that train.
Yeah. Great. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And casting a positive vision is beautiful. Like just giving, anchoring that in someone's mind. I remember a friend who was going through a divorce who had a sudden epiphany. And she said, you know what? I'm either going to have a great marriage or a great divorce because life's too short to have a bad either.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, perfect. And that was their own commitment to themselves. It didn't rely on their partner. She's like, I'm going to make this be amazing. And it's either going to be amazing together or apart. Still going to be amazing. And I thought that was pretty courageous and pretty wise.
Well,
I think that's what you said.
You make your own story. So
yeah,
you're your own author.
Absolutely.
So I'm not letting anybody else write my story right now.
Good for you.
So
okay, well, I'm glad to hear that. Anything you want to check in on, or you feel like that just the update is enough?
No, I think the update's enough. I'm looking forward to the other conversations about the development of that strategy going forward as far as roles, responsibilities, that type of stuff, because regardless of where the road is, I want to leave a strong foundation in for whatever, for me, for whoever, and going forward. So
yeah, great. Super, super. Okay. Awesome. Does anybody else want to ask other questions? We've got, I'm around here. I can stick around for another 25 minutes or so. If not, we can close out. But any other comments, questions, interactions?
Michelle, I didn't hear the beginning. I hope things are going well for you.
Yeah. Things are moving along.
Good.
So thank you though. But you know, Shane, you talk about credibility.
Mm-hmm.
And all that, and trust me, I'm on board 100%.
Yeah.
So part of you know, my struggle or hurdles or whatever word you want to put to it, I just call it part of my obstacles at this moment, is I understand that I can be viewed as the person that's, I call it shaking up everybody's snow globe, right? They've been doing everything this way for X amount of time, and you're coming in and shaking up the snow globe. But isn't that what I'm supposed to be doing?
This is one of the things that I get so many. I get this very often. People get hired. The boss says, we want you to come in and shake things up. We need a disruption. We need a change. Mm-hmm. The boss has no idea what that means or what she's asking for. It's so common. So the person comes in, they're like, I got a blank check to mix things up. I see where we need to go. I'm an expert. I've done it before. I got this. Hand me the ball. I'm going to go run it. So they start running it, and they just have roadblock after roadblock after roadblock. I'm like, what is going on? And the boss goes, yeah, well, you know, when I said mix things up and change, what I meant was more like this. And you're like, well, that's not mixing things up. That's like barely incremental change. They're like, yeah, but for us, that's really mixing things up. And then you're like, well, that's boring. I don't want to do that. And that's a waste of time and money. And why would you want to do that? That's stupid. That's really common.
Mm-hmm.
And this comes back to Colin's comments about onboarding.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Alignment expectation is a series of conversations marked by many misunderstandings. That's just how it works. So you should expect lots of misunderstanding. You should expect that when they said the word mix it up or change, that they had a semantic range that was like this and your semantic range was over here. You know, the meaning of that word, the range of meanings that that word could have, because you guys don't know each other. You haven't grown up together. You're not best friends. You're just meeting. So those words, that those language patterns aren't overlapping yet. So it takes time to get that fan to get a Boolean overlap that goes, oh, okay, then now I see we're speaking the same way. Okay, that's what you mean. I mean that too. Okay, now we got it. When you say that word, it means this. I'm there. Super normal. And so if you go back, so that's just point one, no matter what context you enter, that's going to happen. Point two is, if you remember, in the first 90 days, you're looking at an organization and you want to create change, you need to ask the question, how fast should I go when I create that change? And if the organization is in denial, if the team thinks things are generally going okay with a few minor issues, then you've got to go slow. But if the team knows that everything is falling apart, and if they don't get changes, they're going to lose jobs, that's despair. And when you are facing despair, you got to go fast. But if you go fast when you're supposed to go slow, your credibility is stolen. When you go slow when you're supposed to go fast, credibility is removed. That's the trick. Yeah. So you got to know, which primary emotion am I dealing with? Despair or denial? Denial is slow, despair is fast.
The answer is yes. It depends on which person you're talking to. In my situation, right? One owner wants to go slow, and you know, and that's fine. The other owner is, what do we need to do, and what do I need to move out of your way?
Yeah, so I would just tell you right now that it's you are stuck. There is no way to change the way those owners are interacting or what their beliefs are. You can't be the one to do it. You've done everything you can. You've framed it, you've mirrored it, you've showed them what the options are, and now you have to make a decision. Can you accept that you will always probably be a little bit handcuffed and a little bit frustrated? And can you just accept that and take a paycheck and do your job at half pace because there's nothing here? And that's okay. That's a valid choice, because maybe you have a lot of other things in your personal life that you want to focus a lot of emotional energy on, and you don't want a job that is so demanding that you have no space to heal what you need to heal personally. And so this is a great job where you can phone it in and do it really easy and say yes a lot and just do things as they ask, even though you're the chess master and you can see 10 moves down the road that's going to be a bad idea. It doesn't matter. You're like, hey, you made a choice. Make your choice. Sounds good. I'll execute. Done.
Yep.
Just that's a valid course of action when you've tried your best to show them what value you could create and you haven't been seen, or they can't get agreement, or they're afraid. I mean, your two bosses need to get a meeting with me and I'll straighten them out, but they're not going to do that because I'll tell them they're destroying their organization. They're hurting their team. That's what I'll tell them. I'll help them understand that. But the bottom line is, this is your new reality. And I think you have to be faced with now a decision, which is, can I accept my reality knowing that it's not likely to change? And so I will change myself and I will reprioritize where my interest is, where my fulfillment is, where my energy is, or it's time to start looking for new work.
No, I'm 100% on board with you.
Good. And if you want my initial hunch, can I ask you a couple questions?
Sure.
If you were to simply do the lowest thing that's expected and you knew that it would cause and cost problems down the road, but you've already done the warnings, but now you're going to do them anyway, is it a really demanding job?
No.
Okay. You could kind of do it at half speed and they'd be really grateful for it. And maybe one guy would wish you moved faster, but.
Yeah. I'm literally bored out of my mind. Okay. Only because, you know, you're talking an organization that we had, you know, as far as processing, handling, you know, 60,000 employees, I'm down to barely 4,000 employees. So, you know, I had a staff of 25 and I now have 4. Yeah. So, you know,
so look, if I'm going to just give you, I'm going to hazard a guess. I'm going to take a risk and use my intuition. I believe that the universe has served you up a job that is really easy, because you have a bigger job that is much harder to do and you're not getting paid for it. And this is your job to grow as a person. And most of that is going to happen in your personal life. And it's going to require considerable inner resources to go through and a lot of courage. And there's going to be emotion and there's going to be healing and it's going to be beautiful. And you're going to be a new person on the other side of it. But if that means, and this is where I would say you're going to need more resources to go through this. The same way that if someone were going through a divorce, I would say, don't change your job if you're also divorcing. Stabilize one part of your life so that you can destabilize the other part in order to get through it. And I'm not saying you're going through a divorce. You are going through a major move. You got major issues with your son. You certainly have family of origin issues that are now surfacing, which, by the way, is completely normal. You know, we mostly don't deal with family of origin issues until we're in our 30s and 40s anyway. And so that's normal. So just take a beat and go, okay, let me get really serious over here in this personal area of my life. Let me take on whatever I need to take on. Let me invest whatever I need to invest in order to finally resolve the things that have been dogging me my whole life. And let me just phone this job in because it's easy and I get a paycheck and I don't need to make a difference. And once I feel really good over here, then I'll go get a different job. So that's my suggestion to you.
No, I see. I'm right there with you. I see it as well. And, you know, it's just, I have to talk myself through that when I get frustrated, when things, I that is my internal mantra. What you just said is really my internal mantra. Okay, Michelle, you get a paycheck. It's really easy. Life's a little rough. I mean, and talk myself through it.
Yeah, that's pretty much the mantra you have to say. And really divest your emotional investment. You know, begin to draw down whatever emotional currency you have in this job. Just remove it. Begin to remove it. And make sure there's enough in there to get the job done, but not so much that it's causing you to pull your hair out.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Others.
I'm going to chime in. I had a question. You mentioned several times about when credibility is removed. I have a what maybe a director prospect that I've witnessed some contention between him and some other staff in terms of, you know, whether or not they really trust that he's doing what he's supposed to be doing. However, like I believe in the guy. You know, we have very we have a good working relationship. It's just, you know, maybe he values our relationship more than he values what he needs to, like, you know, do to communicate to the other staff, such as like sales team and installation team and service techs. Like he's not yet seeing, like, you know, those bonds are just as important as the bond that him and I share. So my question is, like, if I'm going to position this person in a formal director position where now he is a layer between me and maybe a legacy employee, how do I give him the tools to reestablish maybe some lost credibility there? Like, do you believe in, incremental change that could, you know, help him to, like, okay, like, now that you're in this role, how do I help him hit the ground running and maybe mend some of those wounds?
Yeah, for sure. What I would tell you is, with him, I would first flag for him that you're thinking about a reorganization that's confidential. It's between just the two of you for now. And the thing you want him to understand is he is being considered for a role, but that right now, for him to take that role, he does not yet have the credibility to take it and be effective. And that your interest in the conversation is to see if he would be up for trying to reestablish and build credibility back up in order to take, in order to be considered for the role. So you're using the phrases considered. You know, you're not just going to hand it to him. He needs to understand that for him to be considered for this role, he would need to repair or fully or establish for the first time credibility in specific ways. So a few things to know about credibility that are kind of interesting. So I became a chief leadership officer of a big company because the CEO and I went to college together, and I helped him through, I coached him through some really, really hard business times. They made it, they saved millions of dollars in the business, but it was all confidential. Nobody knew who I was, but he knew that I could help the business save and earn lots and lots of money. So he hired me full time without consulting anybody. And I was given a C-suite title without any direct reports or any budget responsibility or any revenue responsibility. How do you think the masses of the company received me when his college buddy showed up out of nowhere as the chief leadership officer who was going to help with culture and vision and strategy and structure? You know, what do you think happened to my credibility? It went to zero fast. It took me years to earn that credibility. I ultimately did, and he didn't help because he didn't understand. He kept making mistakes. Like, the best thing he could have done for me was to distance himself from me. That would have allowed credibility. The best thing he would have done is to run me through a gauntlet like everybody else. The best thing he could have done would be to say, hey, team, first, I believe we need a role like this. Let's have a debate about, should we have an employee or a consultant? I believe that this person can do this. Let's, and then have the debates and the conversations and the structures. And that would have helped my, that would have cut my credibility earning time in a, by a, an eighth. I would have still had to earn it, but I, it took so long. And honestly, probably the only thing that truly helped my credibility was when people would leave and new people would come on, I had instant credibility. They just assumed you've always been in that role. I trust you. You're credible. We'll do that. Let's get to work. The other thing that helped is when there would be a crisis and I would help somebody and they would finally see, even though they didn't like me and they didn't see why I was there, finally I added value. They were like, oh, okay, I got this guy's back. Right. But it took a long time to get there. So that's just a side story. I know it's not exactly the situation, but I just want you to be aware that, you know, in a family business, having the bloodline does not establish credibility. If anything, it hurts credibility because it's nepotism. Your credibility is there because you've worked really hard, you've been really effective, you've created value, and they go, that guy's legit. We just had a guy graduate the program who was a manager in a multiple generation family business also. He'd been there 15 years. And by the way, JD graduated, everybody. I feel like I need a better process by which we say goodbye to our friends. But anyway, he was responsible for managing two of the 20-somethings that were going to be in charge of climbing the ranks in the family business. And they were a disaster. So he had to go to the family member above and say, look, this person is not being received in the business. They're not. They can't, we've tried coaching, we've tried this, but they're not working. And it was, again, part of it is connected to, they didn't have credibility. And being a family member lowers credibility, not raises it. So so anyway, you, the reason I'm saying all this is I want you to be thinking about what are the concrete behaviors that you need to see from him that you believe will help raise that credibility. What you don't want to do is go and have a conversation with him where you say, hey, you don't have credibility. You need to build it again. Ready, go. That won't work. You know, you've got to know, like, concretely, here are the things I need to see over this amount of time. Over the next 3 months, here are the behaviors that need to change. And here are the people I'm going to be checking in with to see how it's going. And at the end of that 3 months, I'm going to know whether or not your credibility is being rebuilt. At which point, we can discuss whether or not this is a good fit for you. And to be clear, I'm going to be looking at outside candidates too. Even if you're not, tell them you are because you might. So you're like, I'm trying to decide, do I want to fill these roles internally? Do I want to do it externally? I'm certainly going to talk to external talent because I need to benchmark what we have. That's absolutely essential. I would encourage you to do that even if you don't want to hire externally. Go out and find people who have done this job that already have this role in a competitive company and have a conversation with them. And what happens is you realize, like, I remember I had a CEO who was going to take one of his direct reports and put him in the COO role. And I was going, this is going to be a disaster. This person is overwhelmed. They're stressed. And he's like, yeah, but it's a hard job. It's a really hard job. They're going to be stressed and overwhelmed. There's no way around that. And I said, no. Just, I need you to go out and interview three people. I got him a senior VP from Target who oversaw $17 billion in profit and loss and 60,000 employees. He had one conversation with him. He's like, oh my gosh, I'm thinking about this all wrong. That person could do this job in his sleep. And for this person, it is completely overwhelming. And so that's why it's important for you to also be thinking about that. Like, don't just assume that the people in the company are going to take on those roles. Maybe they will. But benchmarking is super, super helpful. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's super helpful. Yeah, I wrote down a ton of notes there, and I got a lot to think about. Thank you for that.
So just for the workshop and for just a few minutes, do you know what behaviors you need to see different?
Sorry,
can you give me some examples? Can you give me some examples of concrete behaviors you would need to see differently to build his credibility?
So that was what I wrote down. Yeah, you said establish, prepare this credibility in specific ways. So for like a good example would be when you say you're going to get this job on the schedule, you do. And it's not something that somebody has to come back to you, you know, two and three times to ask for. So that would be a very specific way to do it the first time. And then another time would be I sometimes get the impression of he's not accepting when he maybe forgot to do something or made a mistake. So that another specific way would be to just immediately own your mistakes. So if somebody comes to you and asks that second request, don't make up some excuse of, oh yeah, I'm too busy, or oh, I did call them when maybe you didn't. Now you're walking on severe, severe dangerous ground. So it's just admit fault and make it right. So that's one of those are two specific ways of just do what you say, and then when you didn't, own it.
Yeah. Good. Excellent. Anything else?
For me specifically, or the group.
You specifically, anything else for you that you would say he needs to do? Are those the two things?
I think that those would be the two focus areas.
Okay, perfect.
I'm sure there's more.
I think that's awesome. And I would say it's over the next 30 days, or the next 60 days, this is what I need to see. Or maybe it's 90 days. I don't know how many times he's doing this. You know, if he's only doing it once a quarter, you may need to go longer than 90 days, but.
No, I like it. We do 25 appointments a day. So it's this is something that it's full-time job is to manage our resources. So, this is something.
So you'd be able to know within 30 days from other people's feedback, whether he's doing these things.
Correct. And I could also solicit that feedback across the board as to the sales staff. Let me know if you have any problems. I'm trying to get a gauge on our response times. It's not like I'm trying to gauge Brian. I'm trying to gauge our company response times.
Perfect. And tell Brian that. Say to Brian, Brian, I'm going to be checking in. I'm not going to say it's personal about you, but I want you to know that I'll be checking this. I need to see this. So here are the two things I need from you. I would love for you to be considered for this role. I can't consider you unless these things are fixed. I'm going to be checking. I'm going to be asking. I'm not going to be asking about you personally, but I want you to know that this is what we're going to do. I just want to be totally transparent and clear with you so that you know it's in your hands whether you get this in a sense,
Right, give it some ownership.
Yeah. People love that kind of honesty. And when you watch video 12 of module 1, you'll see what I'm actually doing is what's called camp 1 of change management, which is developing awareness.
Yeah. I checked that graphic out. And it's so funny. This last night, I'm literally at the holiday party and said, I feel like we're at, you know, a point where we see the mountain that we see the hill we need to take. And, but right now we're still like in the like trails trying to find those paths. Whereas like, you know, soon we could have a helicopter that's like circumnavigating this mountain that like, these are the paths that we need to take up. You know, it's that's where I love that graphic, by the way. It gives me something to actually work with here and a step-by-step process of not just like take the hill. It's like, we have to get to the elevation 10,000 before we get to 50,000, you know? So it's good.
Awesome. Awesome, man. Okay. Well, friends, I think we're at the time. Thanks for joining, and we'll look forward to seeing you all next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Everyone have a great week.
Oh, Michelle?